Welcome to Cruising Through Cinema. I, for one, am Dennis.
And
I am joined by another fellow man.
I, for one, am Dyer, coming to you live from a kinky sex club in upstate New York.
Yes, this is Cruising Through Cinema, the podcast where we take you on a strap-in, buckle-up cinematic journey through the filmography of the one, the only, Thomas Math Power Cruise the Fourth.
Hey, you got it right this time.
We go through the films in chronological order. This week's episode is on the 1999. I don't know. What do you call a film when it's their last epic directed by Stanley Kubrick? Eyes Wide Shut.
Because he dies before this comes out.
Is it his magnum opus? Is that what that means? Or
Your magnum opus is like your masterpiece.
I don't know. Maybe someone thinks this is their masterpiece. I would say they need to stop and find a better movie. It's a good movie. Stanley Kubrick's known for 2001: A Space Odyssey,
The Shining,
Clockwork Orange,
Full Metal Jacket.
Yes, just beautiful movies. Beautiful movies. This is interesting.
Very. And we need to preface this by saying we watch this together, so.
Yes, this was actually, I lose count every week, and I'm not sure, but I think this is actually the 20th episode.
That sounds right.
This was the first time we've actually sat down and watched one together, which is hard because we live about 100 miles apart. It's okay, though. We watched Eyes Wide Shut, which is probably
a film you watch with your buddy.
No, I highly recommend watching it with a buddy.
That's true.
Because for those of those who don't know, Stanley Kubrick has a lot of symbolism and twists and turns and kind of psycho thriller type stuff going on in his films. A lot of like, what the hell is going on? What does this actually mean? What happened in the background there? Was that supposed to be something, or was that a film goof? In this movie, you can go way deep in the woods. For those who don't know, this film maybe is a little risque. It opens with full frontal nudity of a beautiful woman named Nicole Kidman. And we don't get Tom Cruise. Do we even get Tom Cruise's butt? I don't think we get Tom Cruise's butt.
No, we get Nicole Kidman full back shot, nude.
They're just like casually talking in the bathroom, which, I mean, married couples do.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't know. It kind of set the tone for just like, what is actually going on? Is this all a dream? I don't know. Did you go into the weeds exploring this kind of like, I would say
I did a little bit. I read into
the
it.
Four-fifths through the film, there is a scene that is never going to be out of my brain. Not for good reasons. Not necessarily for bad reasons. Just reasons.
Table.
Yeah. Just table. If you haven't seen the film, there is a human table. And there are things happening on that table that just want to know.
That consenting adults do.
Do you have to
sign a waiver?
Like, is that like part of the like hierarchy? Do you have to table first? Or is it just like a friendly thing to do? Like, oh, ma'am, you look tired. How about instead of standing, how about I become a table for you?
How about you wreck my back by laying on it? And letting a
guy lay down.
And I'm wearing all black, so of course this is going to stain when I take and I got to take it to the dry cleaner tomorrow.
Yeah, but if they all use the same costume sop, he's a pretty easygoing costumer.
Well, yes, he is.
And what was the meaning behind the guy, the costume shop that's no like it sold ownership? Like, was that supposed to be something?
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah,
or was it somebody Tom already knew? Because it was not.
The original owner was someone Tom knew, so
he goes he was there. The doctor. Okay, he was the doctor. Got it.
He was the doctor of the original owner, and he's like, I just saw him last month. And he's like, no. He moved 3 years ago. So, like, yeah. Was the doctor coming back to New York just to... And what was what was with the whole AIDS scene? Like, the hooker that he, like, almost sleeps with?
Yeah, it's like, are they just telling a story here? Is there some deeper meaning there?
Because he's gonna hook up with the roommate. Like, they're flirty, they're everything. And she's like, you should probably sit down. He's like, I don't want to sit down. She goes, no, you should probably sit down. And she goes, Candy got the, whatever her name was, Jasmine, Candy, Velveeta, whatever.
Coco.
Got the call. She got the blood test back. She's HIV positive. And Tom's just like, all right, whatever. And just, like, leaves.
I'm trying to find... Yeah, I was confused by her as well. And evidently, there's, like, a bunch of... Allegedly, there's a bunch of, like, editing and cuts that were made to the film. Because the theories are that Stanley Kubrick was trying to expose... Was making allusions to, like, how corrupt Hollywood is and kinky sex cults going on in Hollywood and, like, Epstein Island, all that. Like,
it's like Pizzagate.
Yes. Like, basically, he was trying to... That's the speculation, but, I mean, he's dead, so it's...
And no, he died shortly before this movie came out. So Hollywood got it, saw his... Cut those on the... on the cutting room, left those on the cutting room floor, and then killed him.
And he was evidently really pissed about the way they edited those scenes at the end.
Apparently, Stanley Kubrick was a bear to work for, though. Like, he terrorized Shelley Duvall on the set of The Shining, like, where she needed therapy because she had PTSD from it. So, he was just an ass, from my understanding, as a director.
Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise in this film had, what I read is they had, their contracts were, like, open-ended, where, like, they could, like, anytime he's like, oh, we gotta do a reshoot, like, they had to do it. Like, it was...
And they're a real-life couple at this point. They are married.
Yeah, which there are some scenes where it doesn't feel like they're acting, they're really just having a marital fight.
Exactly, so, and funny, you know, this is... So, the Church of Scientology, which we know that Tom's a member of, this is a little trivia, like, he disappeared for, like, because this movie was shot continuously, right? There were no breaks. It was, like, I want to say 15 months or, like, 2 years or something that this was shot, and, like, it was constantly shooting. Like, he hadn't checked in with the Church of Scientology, because this was shot, like, over in England, I think. But they made
it was like, shot in London. But it was supposed to be taking place in New York.
New York. The Church of Scientology, like, couldn't get a hold of Tom Cruise. They couldn't get a hold of their cash cow, so to speak. And they were legitimately worried that he was defecting from the church because he was over in, like, him and Nicole Kidman just lived over in England for years, you know, shooting this movie. And, like I said, the church was like, we need our face and our cash cow back, because, yeah.
Yeah, it was problematic.
Very problematic.
Yeah, so I just don't understand.
From my understanding, so we're jumping around a lot, but this is the kind of movie you can't really follow linearly. Anyway.
I will say, you said, like, this is not a movie that I had watched fully before. And we even discussed this. I think we both had tried to watch it, and we both got to about the point where basically the movie starts with them getting ready to go to a fancy party, like an upscale.
And Nicole has fantasies of cucking Tom Cruise.
She gets drunk and gets hit on by this old,
silver talking,
fox.
We're talking saggy balls down to his knees old.
Yeah, Silver Fox.
Sure.
And Tom is Dr. William Baker? Hartford.
But is this the scene where he's gonna like literally has two women throwing themselves at him and he turns them down?
They're at a party. He's got women like flirting with him because he's just, he's just a hot doctor.
He's a general practice doctor.
He's a general practitioner. Because we were speculating. That was what made this film fun to watch together.
Yeah. Was he a gyno? Was he a cancer specialist?
What did he do? The first half of this movie is incredibly slow. And I could never, on my own, get through it. I would always inevitably fall asleep.
Yeah.
Then there's his other doctor buddy, played by Sidney Pollack, Victor Ziegler.
Yeah.
You don't really know what's going on with him.
Who turns heel at the end of the movie.
Who's actually, part of the kinky sex cult and kind of seems to be one of the higher ups in the kinky sex cult.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy sitting in the chair in the middle of it.
He's in the know on some things.
He's in the know on a lot of things.
Because Todd, like, his friend Nick, who we did.
First off,
we're jumping around, but you get the pianist. There's a pianist at this party. And he comes up, and we made the comment that, like, what kind of piano? Because the guy's like, excuse me, we need to talk to you for a moment. You've got a call in the other room. Like the waiter. And we're like, that's weird. Like, what kind of piano emergency is going on? Which he plays a pivotal role in the film.
Right.
Nick Nightingale.
And we don't
who was an old who was a med school dropout with Tom, with Dr. William.
We don't Bill meet Hartford. We don't meet Sidney Pollack until he goes, hey, I need your help. And there's a hooker that overdosed, just full frontal nudity, in a chair in a bathroom.
Yeah, she took a speedball.
And you know that furniture has to be so riddled with mildew and mold for being in a bathroom.
Well, you know you're in a rich house. Was that his house?
Maybe.
Like, it's not real clear, but it is demonstrated he has a ginormous, like,
Bathroom's got a fireplace, it's got a big sink, it's got a shower, it's got...
Well, anytime you have room, if there's room for three people to have a casual conversation in a bathroom, it's freaking huge.
That's true.
It's like a 200 square foot bathroom.
Is that big for bathrooms?
I would say that a bathroom's like 80 to 90 is probably like your run-of-the-mill bathroom. Like 10 foot by 10 foot's 100. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you think 20 feet by 20 foot? No, that's 400.
Yeah, it's probably it's like
20 by 10, 10 by 20.
9 by 20.
180 square feet?
Yeah. 9 by 20. 9 by 12.
All right. 98 square feet.
Yeah. But yeah, so we've got why is Sidney Pollack, Victor Ziegler, why is Dr. Ziegler got this hooker situation? Like, okay, that's weird. And then you got the weird, what's going on with the piano man? Like, that caught our attention. We were like, what kind of piano?
And he probably will be for the rest of his life. He's talking, the piano man was talking to Davey, who's in the Navy.
Sure.
It's a piano man reference by Billy Joel.
Oh. I think it went over my head. So yeah, that you get that key. There's kinky sex stuff going on. His wife is fantasizing about being unfaithful, and
so she had a fantasy piano because, man
emergencies, and they're all gonna. So that's honestly the trifecta that sets up the whole movie. We didn't realize it at the time. We've got to have her explaining in painful detail the time she fantasized about sleeping with a Navy officer.
Because she got hit on and she essentially told Tom
she was hit on and drunk and then smoked a bunch of pot.
And she didn't hook up with him, but she wanted to. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was this before they were married?
They were married. They're on because she mentions that there was like a babysitter watching the kids.
That's right.
Because when you're filthy, stinking rich, and you live in a brownstone in New York, you have a nanny.
So they went on She went on vacation because he wasn't there, was she? Was he?
No, he was there because they made love that night, and she wasn't actually there.
She was thinking of the naval officer.
Yes.
Okay.
Come on, Dyer. Right. Come on. And this is the point of the film where I've never... That's basically where my viewing ends up until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So I never actually even gotten them that far.
I always had fallen asleep around the pot smoking scene when she's just making fun of him about how there's no way when he's feeling a woman's breast that he doesn't think of anything else.
Get a boner?
Yeah, basically. So then he basically gets... Does he get called? Yeah, then he gets called out because one of his patients passed away that had been in hospice. So he went to go meet with the family, and this old man's daughter starts hitting on him. That was interesting.
She said that she's always loved him and wants to be with him.
Yes, this lady throws him. So like he's given an opportunity,
and we get our cruiser. We get our cruiser
basically,
verse in this.
Basically, in spite of what, just in light of what his wife has told him, and being just he's like pissed off with his wife, and then she tries to hit on him, and then he's like, yeah, why not just cheat on my wife? So he gets super horny.
Yeah.
You get horny, like, Tom.
Can we talk about the cruiserverse connection for a minute?
Yeah. Go for it.
So the woman of the daughter of the man that just died, who's Tom's patient, she's engaged or married to, I always forget his name, but he's like Gideon on Criminal Minds. He was Greg in Dharma.
He looks like low budget Batman. He looks like low budget Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, he was Greg in Dharma and Greg. He was in...
You know who he is. Yeah. If you've seen him, you know who he is.
He was in Far and Away with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, who are also Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman and him in Eyes Wide Shut.
Yes, it was the easiest cruiserverse that we've had in a while. It wasn't hard to connect those dots.
No.
I
mean, hell, we had a cruiserverse alone with Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise.
Yeah, but that's just too obvious.
Right. But anyway... Yeah, so he's like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to cheat on my wife. I'm going to go and I'm going to go find a hooker. And he finds a hooker.
Well, he's like walking. Well, it's more like...
He's walking.
He's having thoughts that men sometimes would have if their wife is like saying things like that. He's like, yeah, I could just get whoever I want.
The patient he's walking died.
Down. Yes.
And he's just walking on the streets of New York because he's sad. And then he's thinking... Yeah, I'm attractive. I'm a successful doctor. I can pull any piece of tail that I want to.
And then this hot street woman pulls him in.
Yeah, and she's like,
actually, my house is right here. Like, she was like just standing on the street corner by her apartment and was like, you want to come upstairs?
He's like, yeah, sure. And he goes in, and it's the most shithole rundown apartment ever.
Yeah, it's just...
It's like I'm pretty sure
rent apartment.
I'm pretty sure her and her roommate share a room.
Yeah, they do.
And like the kitchen, right? The stove is in the middle of the kitchen. Not, I mean, most stoves are in the kitchen, but like this is like the stove / radiator. So they haggle, they negotiate, they sit down on the bed. He goes to pay her and. They're going to do what a streetwalker and a man who pays her do.
And then his wife calls.
He gets a call from his wife. And he says... he's
like, it's going to be a little bit longer. I'm waiting for the family. There's yada, yada, yada.
He thinks he's going to, yada, yada. He thinks he's going to sleep with her. Then he has a change of heart. His conscience gets the best of him. Still pays the streetwalker, but leaves.
Yes.
And goes home.
So this is, so he goes home. That's what I was trying to remember. But then what happens the next, like, when does he end up at, like, the jazz club where his friend's playing? Like, what happened that night that got him out in the middle of the night? Do you recall?
Do you know?
Or was this all one night? No, I don't remember.
No, it was all one night.
So does he not go home?
It was two nights.
I'm pretty sure he goes
home. No. He doesn't. He goes to the jazz club on his way home because he's walking.
After the hooker, he goes to the jazz club.
Yes, and meets Nick.
Because you're right, because he sees the poster and is like, oh, I'll stop.
And he walks in and the set's over. And Nick tells him about the kinky sex club and the password Figaro.
Yeah, he begs him to give him the password.
And which he does. And then...
Because he's like, yeah, and I...
To be fair, this is the winter time, so it's probably like 11 o'clock, 10, 11 o'clock at night at this point. So like, he goes to the jazz club, guy
has a beer, yeah.
Gets the password for this kinky sex club and decides that he's going to go to it.
And he is stoked. He is so stoked.
But Nick says, hey, you need a costume. You can't just show up in a tux or a suit
or whatever you wear. A question.
Yeah.
How does he know he needs a costume when he's blindfolded the whole time?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Not explained. I mean, clearly someone could have said something that he overheard that we're all wearing. Like, hey, nice costume, Chuck. Are you ready for the 5 p.m. orgy? You betcha.
So he's like, you gotta go. So, and then Tom decides he's gonna go to, he has a patient that has a costume shop. So he goes and rings the bell.
Yeah, he's like, ah, I know the right place.
And he goes there and he's ringing the bell and this guy opens the door. By the way, he's got a ground level apartment that overlooks opens the door, and the door's open to the entire street.
But it's clearly after hours because it's like probably 11:30 because the guy's getting ready for bed.
I feel like it's midnight because I feel like he woke him up. I feel like it's midnight or whatever.
Well, it's like 11:30. He's got his robe. I don't know. Anyway. He locked up his gay. It's very clearly alluded to being a gay costume shop.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's like called like rainbow costumes or something. Like there's exactly. a giant rainbow on the light outside.
So Tom goes, "Hey, we're so and so," and he goes, "I'm his doctor." He's like, "Well, he moved out of the country a year ago. It's
pretty urgent that I."
And he's like, "No, I just saw him a month ago or whatever." He's like, "Hmm." He's like, "But yeah, I'm going to this party. I need a black cape with a hood and a mask." And he sweet talks this guy into letting him into the.
He basically says like, "I'm gonna pay extra. Like, don't worry.
I'll pay you the rental, and then like $200 on top of that, I believe."
Yeah.
So they go in there, and
which at the end of the movie, it ended up being like not a bad deal, even though he lost part of the costume.
Well, had it. Yeah. So what happens after he goes in there?
He goes in there, and they're walking around, and he's like, "What about this? What about that?" And then all of a sudden, they go into a room, and then there's two very
effeminate
Asian men and a younger lady.
And played by Lily Sobieski, who was also of the movie Joyride with Steve Zahn and Paul Walker fame.
Yes. You recognized her immediately, and I had no idea who she was.
I did.
I know her. Where do I know her? But yeah, that was interesting. That was an interesting scene. And then we find out it's his daughter, and she's 14.
The shop owner's like, "I'm going to have you both arrested. I'm going to beat the crap out of you."
And he locks them in the room. He locks them in the closet, doesn't he?
Maybe.
I don't know. He keeps them captive. But then he rents the tux, Tom calls a cab, and he's on his way onward and upward to the sex cults. And he gets in, gives the password, and then this is when you and I, our jaws hit the floor. Because, like, I knew this movie had some, like, weird mask stuff, but I thought it was just, like, a masquerade ball type situation. Did you have any inkling that there was a sex cult in this movie?
No idea. No.
No idea. No idea. So we see this kinky sex cult, and we're Well, there's like a ritual. There's like a guy in the middle, and then just like, I don't know, undulating women.
It's almost like a Catholic mass.
Well, they're like in robes. The women are all dressed in robes, and then they disrobe.
Where's the choir? Where's the choir music coming from?
Yes, there's like a guy. There's just a oh, you know your stereotypical cult music.
It's like the Halo music. Oh,
yeah, yes, like somewhat like just gothic cult music. I don't know what else to say. It felt like a music video for the band Ghost.
Yes,
but it wasn't. It was not.
No,
and I thought that we were gonna get like 2 minutes of just like alluding to stuff. Dyer, what happens after this?
So, Tom.
Women start grabbing men by the hand.
Yes, and taking them to the room for a very vigorous Rogering. And a woman comes up to Tom as he's walking and she says, "You should not be here. You need to leave." And he keeps walking around.
And he's like, I didn't come to a sex cult. Not to look around. Right. Look around.
So she. A guy walks up to this woman and says, "Do you mind if I take her for a while?" And Tom's like, "Sure." So he keeps walking around. He walks into almost like a library, right? A study, and raging fire's going. He sees a man and a woman going at it while using a man as a table.
No, he's just wandering around observing just... I mean, Dyer, this is like frat party, wall-to-wall people, but banging. Instead of drinking Keystone Lights, they're banging.
Yeah, and then he goes into a room.
And Stanley Kubrick was upset because of the way this was going to be edited to get an R rating. It was supposed to be...
NC-17.
Well, he wanted it to be, yeah, like not rated or NC-17, but you're like... And this is, honestly, I get it, because it's supposed to be, like, shocking to the viewer, which it still is, but you're supposed to have the perspective of Tom, but they have, like, it's kind of like Austin Powers, where there's just fruit and baskets placed at just the right spot, or, like, someone will walk by just as the camera's panning, and you don't see anything.
You see full frontal.
Yeah, but he wanted, basically, this to be hardcore porn.
Right, yeah, so...
which is what, I mean, it's just
one step away.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of people fucking.
So he finally finds a woman that he goes, "You know what? I'm going to sleep with her." And then the woman that he saw earlier, who probably just got blasted, walks up to him fully nude and goes, just imagine the stuff dripping. Ugh. And, goes, "Hey, you mind if I take him?" And she goes, "No, not a problem." And she literally says, You have to leave. "You cannot be here. You are not safe. You have..." And then the doorman goes, "Excuse me, sir. Did you arrive in the taxi?" Yeah. He goes, "He's at the front door waiting for you."
Yeah. And then he gets escorted to the like ballroom entry area. And then he gets confronted.
They say, "What's the password?" He gives them the right password, and they go, "What's the second password?" And he goes,
"Wasn't it Fidelio?"
No, that was the first password. There was no
second password. There was no second password, but when he arrived in a cab, they basically said, "Okay, we're going to ask him for a second password, and if he says anything, we know he shouldn't be here." And they only knew... The only reason why he could have known was the pianist, I guess.
Right, because they kill the pianist.
Is it because the pianist has a different password?
Maybe.
Because that was the part that I was trying to understand. Because how did they know it was him?
Everyone has the same password. Everyone has the password. How did they know that Tom get in?
But then, how did they know that the pianist is the one that gave it to Tom?
They probably grilled him off screen.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Or they probably,
he's the only like yeah. Or plus, they maybe do a bunch of background and they know they have a connection.
Cindy Pollack even said at the end of the movie, near the end of the movie, "Everyone arrived in limos and you arrived in a taxi."
Yes.
Like you know. So one, they knew for a fact that you didn't belong there.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the film is basically Tom scrambling to figure out what's going on. And then
he doesn't run once.
No.
And he keeps having the flashbacks of Nicole, of his wife, just getting absolutely riled by the Navy guy. But it's just him imagining that because she said that she imagined the naval guy when they were first married or on a vacation. I mean, who hasn't imagined someone else other than their partner, right? But so he takes that as a sign. Oh, she had a thought. Because honestly, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but it's true. Women are more mental creatures and men are more
physical
or visual, right? Women tend to think about the relationship or the act, and you know, they got to get in the right mindset, where a man sees a woman naked. Ooh, ooga booga, ooga booga.
We would be remiss if we didn't talk about Alan Cumming.
No, he was coming all right.
No, he wasn't. He was like, he played the gay front desk clerk at the hotel.
That's what I was getting at. He was obviously coming at the front desk. It would have been better if he went, "Hello."
Which do you? I would say he's known for two movies. Like, not like he's never the starring role, but he plays Boris in GoldenEye. But what other film?
I was gonna say GoldenEye. Spy Kids.
He's Nightcrawler in X2.
He is Nightcrawler.
He is Nightcrawler. I just thought of that. Sorry.
He is Nightcrawler.
But basically, he's the one that tells him, like, "Yeah, your buddy, he kind of got roughed up."
Yeah, but, you know, two guys.
Did we think his friend's actually still alive? Because they imply he just got on a plane with a black eye.
No, absolutely not. They killed Nick.
Did they, though? Because wouldn't they be afraid Tom would say something to, like, his wife?
No, because, and then, like, that's the next morning, and Tom gets home the wee early morning. I think we're saying, what, like, 5 a.m.?
Yeah, and then basically, like, sleeps, and his wife's like, "Oh, honey, you've had a long night, come to bed." And he sleeps in his clothes, and then, like, he probably doesn't actually sleep, but then, like, an hour later, he's like, "I gotta go to the office." He cancels all of his appointments.
The costume.
Yeah.
He hides it in, like, a drawer or whatever.
It's like a file cabinet, like a locked.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the hotel and talks on Alan Cumming's character, and he's like, he got roughed up. See, this is why I think it's not a dream, because I was reading something, and they said that Nicole's character didn't find the mask. So what had happened in someone knew who he was, right? Because he shows up back to the sex club, like, in the morning. He drives out there, and, like, they hand him a letter addressed to him and say, essentially stop what you're doing. And then he goes home that evening and he sees Nicole sleeping with the mask on his side of the pillow. You're made to believe she found it and she fell asleep. But from what I read about it, she didn't find it, that someone knew where he lived, broke in and put that mask on the pillow as a threat.
We're watching you, yes.
Yeah, like the horse head in The Godfather, right? Because that's when he takes the costume back the next day and says, "I lost the mask." The guy goes, "Okay, you know, the mask is $20 and, you know, the rate for the day plus 200 over." And Tom's just carrying on, like, thousands of dollars in cash in his wallet. Because he's always, like, whipping out.
Yeah, he's just throwing hundreds around. Like, he just keeps wads of hundreds, which seems very dangerous in New York City at 3 a.m.
Very, very dangerous. So he gets home, and basically is guilt has a guilty conscience, so he tells Nicole Kidman everything, right? Tells her everything, tells her what happens. They're walking around what you and I said was an FAO Schwartz with their daughter, because it's right before Christmas time, right? And she's like, I want this teddy bear. And you can tell Nicole's character has been crying. It's just very palpable, very tense between them. And then at the last line of the movie, Nicole says, or the three last lines, she goes, well, I know what we need to do, and we need to do it as soon as possible. And Tom says, what is that? And she says,
does she just say fuck?
She just says fuck.
Yeah.
So apparently that was their kink the entire time. And she fantasized about the naval officer. He takes it a step further and actually goes and is trying
he really did tell her about the whole sex cult and everything.
Yeah, he told her everything. He confessed everything to her.
So did he show her the mask, or I'm trying to remember.
No, he just told her everything. Cuz he had a guilty conscience.
Yeah, it was a wild movie. I don't know. This is not a movie you should tell anyone that you really enjoyed or that you loved. No. But I had a great time watching it. And obviously, it probably gets an extra 5%, 10% bump because you and I had a great time watching it together.
Yeah.
Because it was just such a what the hell? You think it's going to be one thing, and then all of a sudden it becomes this thriller with this extortion, and all Tom's trying to do is get some whatnot.
I mean, it's like a psychological thriller. Yeah.
No, it starts out this is going to be kind of melodramatic and kind of lame. And then you're blindsided with sex cult.
Right.
I if you would have told me Tom Cruise sex cult movie, I would have been in.
Oh yeah, me too.
100%. I was not expecting that. And therefore I was it's going to be, because all I had seen up until this actual full viewing was his wife wants to leave him because she's thinking about other men. And he's going to be all mopey and sad, which you get a little bit of that, but it's really him going my wife's fantasizing about banging other guys. Why don't I just go get my rocks off?
Right.
So.
Yeah. So that's Eyes Wide Shut.
Okay. We got to do the rundown. Center Tooth.
Yep. No.
Present. Center Tooth. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Center Tooth. He had some grins with Center Tooth. Unibrow is gone completely. I don't think we'll ever see it again.
No, it's been permanently. It's been electrolysis off.
Yeah, he had laser hair removal. It's a thing of the past. And then I felt he ran, but maybe, I guess he didn't.
No, he never ran.
No running. Okay, well, we're at the time where we need to now rank the film, and let me do the rundown. Let me pull the rundown up. Rundown, that's a movie starring The Rock, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Rock and Sean William Scott.
Yeah, I've heard it's good. I've never actually seen it.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is Walking Tall, which is a remake.
Yeah, I think I always get them confused. Okay, I was right. This is episode 20. So, currently, 19 is Legend. 18 is Endless Love, 17 is Outsider, 16 is Taps, 15 is All the Right Moves, 14 is Losing It, 13 is The Color of Money, 12 is Born on the 4th of July, 11 is Interview with the Vampire, 10 is Jerry freaking Maguire, 9 is Cocktail, 8 is Far and Away, 7 is The Firm, 6 is Rain Man, 5 is Days of Thunder, 4 is Mission Impossible, 3 is Risky Business, 2 is A Few Good Men, and 1 is Top Gun. Okay. I think we can say this is definitely in the top 15.
Agreed.
Because 16 is Taps. So it's definitely better than Taps.
Yes.
15 is All the Right Moves. It's definitely better than that to me.
I agree.
Losing It is 14. It's better than Losing It.
Also agreed. It's
way better. From every reason you could name. Losing It, surprisingly fun. 13 is The Color of Money. 12 is Born on the 4th of July. 11 is Interview with the Vampire, and 10 is Jerry Maguire.
It's better than Born on the 4th of July for me.
Yeah, and it's better than The Color of Money, but I really don't like where we put The Color of Money. Well, I think you and I were kind of contentious with that. Born on the 4th of July, I don't know. Born on the 4th of July, no. Born on the 4th of July is a good movie. It's just so depressing.
True.
Like, it's well done. It's, like, obviously a good film, but it makes me hate myself. 11 is Interview with the Vampire. 10 is Jerry Maguire. I don't know. Jerry Maguire feels so like a cardboard cutout compared to this film.
It does. It does. It's very 90s rom-com.
Okay. Let's skip ahead. Okay, so it's not better than Mission Impossible.
Absolutely not.
Which is number 4. 5, we can clearly say it's not better than Days of Thunder, I think.
It's not better than Days of Thunder, no way.
6 is Rain Man. Rain Man's more fun.
No, I agree.
If I have to pick two, I don't know. Because it's hard. This is a movie that's very difficult. Because I am never recommending this to someone other than like you or like my brothers. As like, you should probably watch this. It's fun. Like, I'm never saying that to someone that I'm not super close with. Because imagine telling a coworker, yeah, you should really give that a try. And they look at, they'll never talk to you again. They'll think you're trying to get them to join a kinky sex cult. Which, I mean, if you know of one and they're looking for a referral, maybe. But that's not a conversation you're probably having with Janice in accounting.
No, okay, so not at all.
4 is Mission Impossible. 5 is Days of Thunder. 6 is Rain Man. 7 is The Firm. I think The Firm's better than this.
I agree.
Okay, 8 is Far and Away. 9 is Cocktail. And then 10 is Jerry Maguire. Do we think it's in the top 10? 11 is Interview with the Vampire. And 12 is Born on the 4th of July. 13 is Color of Money. I think if we're not in the top 10, we're in the top 11.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
I would agree.
Okay, is this one where we both say the number at the same time and see if we agree? Because that worked for Jerry Maguire.
Sure.
Okay, so just to recap, 6 is Rayman, 7 is The Firm, 8 is Far and Away, 9 is Cocktail, 10 is Jerry Maguire, 11 is Born, or 11 is Interview with the Vampire. Okay. So let me think here.
I got it.
All right, 1, 2, 3, 9.
11.
Okay, so I had it better than Cocktail. Or, excuse me, I had it better than Jerry Maguire.
Mm.
And you had it worse than Jerry Maguire. So Jerry Maguire is the deciding factor.
I really like Jerry Maguire.
Okay, so you... Okay. Okay, Stanley Kubrick. This is one of the last times we're going to get a director that's like renowned for a Tom Cruise movie.
Right.
Are we going to... I don't know. I feel like I feel like there is still like a... What was it about The Color of Money that we hated so much? Was it the ending?
Maybe...
Because it was that was fun.
For the most part.
The road trip element of it.
I think it was the ending, and that Paul Newman's character was such a sleazeball to his girlfriend.
The ending was like very anticlimactic.
Yeah, they just like, was. They played a round of pool in like the hotel lobby, and Tom let him win.
What you wanted to see, they like, yeah, we're not doing that. We're not having the big showdown in the tournament. No, we're just gonna. Tom is gonna throw the game.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Jerry Maguire's. See, I feel like I've got a bias because I've seen it so many times, and you've got a bias because you saw it for the first time and it blew your mind. So
the human head weighs 8 pounds.
Pounds.
I mean, I'll human head
weighs 8 pounds.
I got 3 rabbits.
Can't beat that.
Can't beat that.
Okay. Fuck it. Eyes Wide Shut is the new number 11.
All right. Man, I just don't know what's going to surpass Top Gun. Like, Top Gun Maverick, maybe?
I mean, it does for me, but I will put it this way. The first time I watched it, I haven't had that much fun watching a film since I was a child. Watching Top Gun Star Maverick. Top Gun Maverick, I haven't been that riveted by a movie since watching Star Wars for the first time.
Dude, it was so good.
So good is it's like probably one of my top 5 favorite films.
But
of all
we
time.
we have 23 years until we have 23 more years of Tom Cruise movies until we get there.
The thing about Top Gun Maverick is, and this is a preview for the 50 episodes from now. The way that movie ends, it you think it's over like 7 times.
Right?
It's just build up, build up, build up, slam. Build up, build up, build up, slam. It is amazing.
It is.
When you think he's fucked, something comes. It's so good. It is so good. I could gush over that film forever. It doesn't get enough love. It does not get, like, obviously get a lot of hype, but it doesn't get the respect that it deserves.
I want to watch it again. I've only seen it once.
Yeah, me too.
I'm gonna watch
it's
it
so
again.
Good. So good. No, I take it back. I have rewatched it. It's great. It holds up. It's still just as good the second watching.
I kind of missed the Val Kilmer scenes in it, so I want to go back and rewatch it.
You missed them?
Well, I watched it, but I don't remember it as clearly as the other parts of the movie.
Gotcha.
You know what
okay,
I'm saying?
Okay, so yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down. So the next film, for the next episode, we've got another.
Is it Eyes Wide Shut? Is it Vanilla Sky?
No, it's Magnolia.
I was gonna say Magnolia.
It's there's like this weird trifecta trilogy of like
Eyes
what
Wide
the
Shut,
fuck,
Magnolia, and Vanilla Sky.
Like Magnolia, you start watching it, you're like, oh, I get it, and then the way it ends.
I've never seen it.
Do you know what happens?
No.
At the end?
No.
Like, you don't know anything about this film?
I have no idea what's going on with Magnolia.
Dire, you're almost... I wouldn't say it's on the level of, like, out of left field, like a sex cult. But it's out of left field how this film ends. Tom Cruise is, like, a macho, like... He's giving a seminar. Like, the whole film is, like, constructed around him giving a seminar to a bunch of, like, beta men. And he's the alpha, trying to teach them how to be an alpha. Like, these men are, like, at a seminar, like a self-help seminar. And Frank T.J. Mackey is going to teach them how to be a man and get a woman. That's all you need to know. It is so good. It's so good. It also has... obviously Philip Seymour Hoffman, but it also has the janitor from The Office.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Patton Oswalt's in this movie. Somebody else.
An epic mosaic of interrelated characters in search of love, forgiveness, and meaning in the San Fernando Valley. Julianne Moore's in it? Okay.
Yeah, who's the guy? Who's the dude from...
Oh, hey, Neil Flynn, the janitor from Scrubs, is in it.
That's what I just said.
No, you said that you said it was the janitor from.
Did I not say Scrubs?
No.
What did I say?
I don't remember. But
what
you said
I say?
I don't know.
There's somebody in this that I'm trying to. The dude from.
The Punisher, Thomas Jane.
No, Fargo.
Oh, William H. Macy.
Yeah, William H. Macy's in this, I believe.
He is. I just came across him on IMDb. Quiz Kid Donnie Smith.
Yep.
John C. Reilly? Oh, you said the janitor from The Office. That's what you said. Oh,
I said The Office? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. So
No, it does not.
You promptly corrected me.
Alfred Molina, a.k.a. Dr. Octavius from Spider-Man 2.
What I'm saying is this is an all-star cast, and it's directed by a good director, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul Thomas. Isn't there a Paul
he's
F.
He's
Thomas
the guy
Anderson?
That did, he's probably most known for There Will Be Blood and Punch-Drunk Love.
I was going to say, Boogie Nights. How can you leave Boogie Nights out of that?
I've never seen Boogie Nights.
What?
I've never seen Boogie Nights.
It's based, so Mark Wahlberg plays Dirk Diggler, right? That's his porn star name. Julianne Moore's in that too, which
Luis Guzman's in that? Please tell me Luis Guzman plays a gay man like he does in every film.
I don't know. Don Cheadle's in it too, I'm pretty sure. But anyway.
John C. Reilly, Don Cheadle, yeah. Oh my God. William H. Macy, it's the same.
It's a great movie, by the way, and it's based off of, it's loosely the John Holmes story. You know who John Holmes was, right?
No.
Google John Holmes right now while we're on this podcast. Google him.
John, H-O-L-M-S.
H-O-L-M-E-S. You might want to do it incognito.
He's a pornographic film actor.
He's known for having a gigantic schlong.
I'm going to go to images. There's no schlong pictures. I must have safe search turned on.
Well, he died of AIDS.
Hmm. So this is a quasi-biopic?
Kind of, but not really.
Loosely based on the events of Dirk Diggler's life?
Well, Dirk Diggler is Mark Wahlberg's character, which is loosely based on John Holmes. But the whole Knight Rider sister, there's a whole Knight Rider sister Christian scene, which is amazing. It's a great movie. I think it was nominated for Academy Awards. It's a great watch. You know what?
Watch Boogie Nights.
Watch okay. Boogie Nights.
Is it streaming? Is it on Paramount Plus? Is it on Netflix? Is it on Amazon? Is it on?
Give me just a second. I will tell you.
Because I don't know if I
Boogie Nights came out in 1997, and it is on Paramount Plus.
I can watch it. Thank you, Mint Mobile. I have 6 months of Paramount Plus.
Here's the tagline. Back when sex was safe, pleasure was a business, and business was booming, an idealistic porn producer aspires to elevate his craft to an art when he discovers a hot young talent.
This sounds like a fun movie.
It is really fun, actually. It's a really
Is it a comedy?
It's got comedic elements. So it's got Mark Wahlberg, Julianne Moore, Burt Reynolds, Luis Guzman.
Luis Guzman's got me curious. I mean,
John C. Reilly, Don Cheadle, Heather Graham, Mark Wahlberg, of course, William H. Macy, Nina Hartley. The only one that's missing right now is the guy that plays Jesus in The Big Lebowski. John Turturro.
Speaking of other movie topics.
Philip Baker Hall's in this. He's also in Magnolia.
Okay.
Okay, anyway. Continue.
I was asked the question today, or it was proposed in a way where I pondered, are Timon and Pumbaa gay?
Yes.
Okay. Because it was phrased to me as like, it was like a trivia thing I saw.
Wait, real quick. Do you want to know? This is going to blow your mind. Guess who is in Boogie Nights? I'll give you a hint. He's connected to somebody who just won Best Supporting Actor for the Oscars for Oppenheimer.
Magneto.
No. Robert Downey Sr. is in this movie, is in Boogie Nights. Which is obviously Robert Downey Jr.'s dad.
Yes.
And Robert Downey Jr. won the one Best Supporting
Actor for
Oppenheimer.
Have you seen Oppenheimer?
Yeah, it's great.
It's good. I think it's overhyped.
Get the
That's what everyone tells me.
It's great.
It's good.
Listen, I'm not going to, like, if I have Boogie Nights or Oppenheimer, I'm watching Boogie Nights, but but I've seen Oppenheimer. I saw it once. I went to the theater and watched it. It's good. I thought it was great.
Not enough booms. Like,
it's okay.
I'm kidding.
Did you want to see him drop the bombs on Japan?
No, I'm kidding. Like obviously it wasn't that kind of film. I just felt that the way that it was, we're getting way off topic here and we were wrapping up. I just feel like the way the story was told was very disjointed.
Yeah, I mean, that's Christopher Nolan for you, though.
Yeah, I just felt like Christopher Nolan'd it too much, if that makes any sense. Like, it could have been more straightforward, and it would have told the story better. Too much of it I was grasping at, like, okay, wait, like, I was having to connect dots, and I'm like, either I need to be a World War II history buff, or
this all you need to know, Oppenheimer obviously, you know, was influential in the atomic bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but they, because he had ties, or he had connections with people that were, communist, right, in the Communist Party, so to speak, they eventually did the McCarthy Act on him.
Don't be stupid, be a smarty, come and join the Nazi Party.
This Nazis, that's communism.
Yeah,
completely different. Anyway, so obviously they pulled
one in the same. You can't be a Nazi and not a communist, but you can be a communist and not a Nazi.
That's true. So they pulled the McCarthy Act on him, right? And the McCarthy Act was the whole thing that the CIA and the FBI and the government set up to say,
we think you're a communist,
and then we're going to blackball you and kick you out, you know, and everything. So that was, like, even though he was influential in working for the United States to do what they did, to, you know, for the atomic bombs, they accused Oppenheimer of being communist sympathizer because he had
ties. He had, basically, his brother was a communist. It's more complicated than that. And his wife, his lovers.
Basically, so they pulled the McCarthy Act on him. So, and they, that's why they decided not to renew.
And Einstein was just trying to tell you the whole time.
It's just the theory of relativity.
You live long to become the villain.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
It was essentially the Dark Knight all along. Is that what that's from?
It was Attica all along. It's what Harvey Dent says to at the end of the Dark Knight. Yes, he says.
Yes, I was right.
He becomes Two-Face.
It was essentially with Christopher Nolan retelling the Dark Knight. Oppenheimer is the Dark Knight. Prove me wrong.
Well, so Harvey Dent becomes Two-Face, and I forget. I think it's Gary Oldman's character No, it's Aaron Eckhart. He says you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And, like, everyone's mad at Batman for stopping. Anyway, all right, that's it. Yeah. That's all I
got. We're good. Christopher Nolan rewrote the same movie. Oppenheimer is the Dark Knight. Prove me wrong.
Okay,
I am the meme of the guy at the college sitting out on the square.
I will start working on that and get it to you by our next episode.
All right, I look forward to it. Well, this has been Cruising Through Cinema. Tell a friend about the show. It would be nice. Leave us a review, comment, leave us a voicemail. If you're on Spotify, all of you dozen people that played this at last episode, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for listening. This has probably been our longest episode to date.
It has.
And if you want more great content like this, tell a friend.
Be a friend, tell a friend.
Be a friend, tell a friend. This has been Cruising Through Cinema, and I'm just going to keep repeating myself. I'm Dennis, and he was Dyer. Thank you.
Thank you.